Jeff Johnson. Jeff Johnson and Charles Cox, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. Before you, at your request, Madam Chair, with a saddened heart, very high disappointment, and hope that we can answer the questions and be able to give you an update in regards to the Minneapolis situation.
Mr. Cox, did you
have any? Good morning, Madam Chairman or Chairwoman. I concur with Jeff. It's unfortunate that we're back here testifying again. We do have some issues at the Minneapolis home, but we are working very, very diligently to correct those issues, both for now and on a permanent basis. Hopefully this will be the last time we appear in front of this committee to discuss deficiencies at any of our homes. We are working again very, very diligently to correct those citations, and I must recognize that we've had good support in making these changes and corrections to our home. Thank you.
Well, that was a little shorter than I thought it would be, but maybe if you want to just give us a little bit more information about the things that you are doing to make changes so that you will have the citations corrected and things you might be doing to make sure it stays, doesn't slip back to having more problems in the future.
Madam Chair, we're very fortunate in our interim executive director in the background and the excellent work that he's been doing. And if you have no objections, ma'am, I'd like for Mr. Cox to be able to explain some of that.
That would be fine.
Madam Chair, we have been working for the last 4 weeks with an organization called Health Dimensions Incorporated. They have been on our site doing focused mock surveys for our facility. They have covered topics such as incontinence, skin integrity, medication errors, range of motions, and fall prevention. They have not only identified these issues, but they are in the process of helping us set up training, restarting the programs, the processes from the very beginning, and helping us set a quality program in these areas. We're doing a lot of training. We're doing a lot of monitoring. And we're very confident that we will correct these issues. We've also had the Department of Health in our facility doing monitoring. They will discontinue their monitoring by Wednesday of next week, and we'll have a new contract with Health Dimensions Group coming in to help us with management oversight, shadowing, and looking at systems in the clinical areas. The good news is we have corrected the citations in the board and care section of our home, and we have started readmitting to that facility. We have a 61-bed board and care. We have cleared all deficiencies from both the Department of Health as well as the VA. So that is a very positive note for our facility. We also have the Department of Employee Relations out there helping us look at our HR functions to make sure that we're doing hiring timely, that we are holding people accountable for coming to work, attendance, punctuality, tardiness. We're making sure that the right people are in the right jobs doing the right thing. They have committed as much time as necessary to assist us with that. The Department of Health has been a valued asset for us to work very closely with to make sure that we can fix these problems permanently. The staff out there have been working very, very diligently, many, many hours to correct these deficiencies. They didn't get there overnight, but we need to fix them in a hurry. and we are working and doing our very best to fix the citations, to fix the systems that are broke, so that we again will be known as a facility that provides quality health care to our veterans. We stumbled, now we need to get up, and we need to fix things, and we need to get back on that road to quality care.
Mr. Cox or Mr. Johnson, what kind of training has been taking place?
We have done extensive training in those areas that have been identified in the mock survey. Bowel and bladder assessment, skin integrity, medication, air reduction, range of motion, and fall prevention. Falls prevention is huge. As you know, in nursing homes, falls happen. You try to prevent as many falls as you can by using certain adapted devices, everything from chair alarms to bed alarms to low beds to mats on the floor, those types of things. You also want to make sure that you provide quality care on a timely basis. So if a resident needs to go to the toilet, that there's someone there to take them so that resident does not try to get up and go on their own and fall and hurt themselves. We're working very, very hard on that. We're also looking at injury reduction to make sure that we have the proper equipment, whether it be hip protectors, whether it be heel protectors, whether it be helmets, that the appropriate adapted devices are on the residents so if and when they fall, the injury is not as severe as without these products. We have been retraining on insulin, on diabetic monitoring. There are many, many subjects that we have been training. We have been training for the last 4 weeks straight. Our key now is to make sure that the training is being done, that the practice has gone from training to being implemented on the units. And that's a monitoring process that we need to do.
And have you changed any of your staffing patterns?
We are in the process, Madam Chair, of looking at our staffing patterns very, very closely. We'll be working with the labor organizations represented in our home to work on this in a conjunctive manner so that there'll be total buy-in to the staffing pattern at our facility. We're working hard on that. We need to look at that. We need to make sure we have the right people in the right roles doing the right job at the right time. That is not something that's going to take months and months to do. We're moving ahead as quickly as possible on that. But we do need to clear these citations before we can focus on much else. The citations have taken front and center stage in our organization.
Well, it seems like some of the units that you have, the care is not as much of a problem as other units, and that would seem to suggest to me that perhaps the staffing patterns might be contributing to the citations.
Madam Chair, that is a possibility, and we are looking at why some units are functioning very, very well, and some have issues, some have problems. And we need to identify what is it. Is it leadership? Is it training? Is it, as you mentioned, staffing patterns? Do they have more heavily care residents on that unit, which means they need to spend more time with those residents to provide the care? We need to look at that, and we will look at that, and we're going to do it.
Mr. Cox, have you been discussing or looking at communication systems improvement at the facility?
Madam Chair, are you talking about communications from staff? Are you talking about communication? I need a clarification.
I'm talking about communication systems that would help the various, you know, the rehab people be communicating to the line staff, to the, you know, scheduling people, being able to talk with the nurses.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the clarification. We are looking. Communication, as you know, is the key component to doing anything. Everybody needs to understand what is being expected of them and what is being told to them. Communication is a two-way street, and we need to make sure that the information is getting down to the appropriate level and that they understand what is expected of them. We are working on our communication skills.
I was thinking more along the lines of systems that would help rather than just the skills. I certainly the skills are important. You need to be motivated to communicate in the first place, but it seems to me that there are ways in which that the systems could encourage that type of communication to be taking place.
Madam Chair, one of the systems, as you have mentioned, that we need to get up and running is our electronic care planning process. Right now, we do not have electronic care planning process. Our four other homes do have such a system up and running, but the Minneapolis campus has lagged behind. We need to put some time and attention to make sure that we can get that electronic care record up and operational. That will provide a lot better communication. As you know, a paper chart, only one person can have a paper chart at a time. With an electronic chart, you can have many different disciplines looking and planning care for that resident. And that's a very important part. And we're working with our momentum, that is our electronic record, to get that up and operational, fully implemented. We need to look at our scheduling department and how we do scheduling. We need to upgrade from a manual system to a computerized system so that we can easily account for all the employees on our campus. We need to work on some of those systems. There are some technology issues that the home is trying to deal with. Lack of computers is another issue that the home is working on. There aren't enough adequate up-to-date computers in the facility, so we need to go out and spend some money to purchase additional technology. There are programs that we need to purchase and implement that will help us with this communication.
And when do you anticipate that you would be installing those systems?
We're going to be installing, Madam Chair, we'll be installing those systems as soon as we clear these citations. Again, I can't tell you, and I keep going back to that, we need to clear the citations. We need to meet standards of care before we go forward. We have put much effort. We can only train and only put so much in front of the staff, new expectations. We need to get on with things in a normal fashion. We can't be in this crisis mode of trying to correct our citations in short periods of time. We cannot plan for the future while we're engaged in that process of correction. Did that make sense?
Well, some people do plan for how to keep things moving in the right direction at the same time that they're trying to get things moving in the right direction.
Madam Chair, if I may, I don't think Mr. Cox has given himself and his staff enough credit because I know for a fact at 6:30 last night he was still at the facility with his staff talking about this momentous and the corrective type things that need with the HDG group and the system processes that weren't working there that are working in the other homes, and including you need to make this call today and you need to make this call today. So even though all the staff is not in that, his management team is definitely working on we need to ensure that this is happening and this is happening. And the momentous is one that calls are being made today to try and get their people in to where is this system in Minneapolis? Why is it not working? We were informed that it takes up to 25, 30 minutes for it to actually get up on the screen. Well, if the system is not any more user-friendly than that, something's broke somewhere, and it may be a hardware-type thing. It may be the landline or whatever, the link. So those things do continue. The falls process continues. So the planning process is parallel to correcting.
When do you think the citations will be corrected and the fines will cease?
Madam Chair, we hope to clear the Department of Health next week. We'll be notifying them next week as when we believe we are fully in compliance. They will come back 3 days after that notification to resurvey us again. I have every belief that we will clear the health department next week. The VA will come in any time after today. They had gave us a 10 working day notice. This expires today. They will be in any time between now and the end of March to resurvey our facility. We have every intention that all 22 citations will be corrected when the VA returns to our facility. We are very concerned about losing the per diem from the VA. We do not want to do that. So we are working very, very diligently to correct those 22 citations that the VA has told us must be corrected.
Are there other questions? Yes, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cox. I'm surprised. I'm disappointed. I've been here not very long. I haven't been on this committee long at all. And in fact, as I was thinking back about this, I mentioned to Senator Berglund that I think it was perhaps maybe the second or third day that this committee met this session, and you were on the agenda at that time. And we had what I thought were some pretty serious discussions. And we were given assurance that it was duly noted, was being handled and taken care of. And I think that I just need to say how disappointed I am. We talk about planning for the future. This should not be a conversation that we're either too busy to tend to or that hasn't made it to the top of the priority yet. Because as I look back on it, even though I have not been here very long, I had a conversation with the chair, and I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but this situation is not something that has just most recently developed. This has been an ongoing, long-term situation. And frankly, I can think of absolutely no reason that we are not fully engaged and have a fully developed plan for the future. And to put things in perspective, of these citations that are being communicated and talked about, those citations, a vast number of them, center around quality of care and facility administration. And I think that the thing that makes this perhaps most difficult is that this is a constituency, this is a need that is in no way, shape, or form diminishing in our communities, in our state, and in this country. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to put it in perspective and to communicate the vast seriousness of this matter. That's all.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. Did you have any response?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, we share in that disappointment. We also share in the severity and the amount of emphasis in the priority, because it truly is a priority for each and every one of us. And by no means do any of us want any of this discussion to appear as excuses. There are no excuses, and we are extremely disappointed. And that's where Mr. Cox and his staff, the board, with their direction and making sure that funds are available and talking to the different groups to get this corrected. Most especially, one of the things that are included in part of those discussions from the board level through Mr. Cox, we'll get these fixed again. But what assurances, what are we going to have in place on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly basis to ensure that there is that oversight? And if that requires a position out there that's been discussed, that we have actual monitors in place, we're willing to do anything to get the level of care up to that of our other homes. So we all share that same concern and that same deep disappointment, Senator.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, I have to agree with Senator Lynch. In fact, my notes here, she said just about exactly the same points I had. I think many of us new members have been here about 10 weeks. And so we're just beginning to understand some of the history that has come before us. And this is, we've heard several testimonies, and we've been at several hearings, and I also sit on the Veterans Committee with some of the rest of you. And I have to say that I don't feel very reassured today, frankly, because we're talking generally about lots of monitoring and shadowing going on, and I'm not hearing anything that has to do with is there any process at all coming from the bottom up, coming from the caregivers talking to you. My sense is it's coming down like a hammer from the top, which maybe that has to be part of the fix. But there also has to be another piece of the fix, has to be conversation from the direct care staff, talking to them about what do they see the problem is. And, you know, it seems to be missing in all the discussions that we have. I'm also extremely disturbed because this has been going on for a long, long time. Perhaps not to the level where we've just discovered recently that we've had residents die, but this has been going on for a few years. And every time we hear or we have a hearing, we talk about we're correcting things, we're addressing this, we're moving this direction, things are improving, and yet every couple weeks we find out that they're not or they haven't, or actually things have gotten worse. You know, when I hear testimony that talks about the need for electronic care records, while I understand that that can improve efficiency, there's been hundreds of thousands of patients out there getting high-quality care without electronic medical records and without computers for a long time. So while that might be just one little piece, I am much more interested in hearing about how are the patients actually getting better care. We heard testimony from the direct care staff that this is a quality of care crisis. And some of that does have to do with training and making sure that they have good mentors there in that piece. But what's happening on the direct care end of this is conversation happening between administrators and supervisors and the people who are delivering care. What do they need to get the job done? We heard a lot of testimony about the fact that RNs have been let go and put off the job, and they are not there to be doing the monitoring and the training for the people that they supervise doing direct care. As a nurse myself, I know that is one of the key pieces that keeps the staff together and keeps the quality of care alive and well. And, you know, I'm very concerned about not only the staffing levels, but who you have in staffing positions and what their level of training is. If you buy in a lot of people that can help patients up to go to the bathroom and do some of the treatments and direct care, but you don't have licensed folks there who are more expensive, I understand that. That to me is a key piece that we're not hearing you talk about.
Madam Chair, Senator, we are working very diligently in establishing the communication from the top down as well as the bottom up. That is very necessary. I said earlier that communication is a two-way street. We are working right now. We've just started a task force that hopefully will allow us to get that discussion from the bottom up to the management. We're going to include AFSCME, the nurses union, which are the nurse managers, and the ADUNs to sit in on a task force to help us determine what our staffing should look like on the various units at our facility. This is critical that we have that communication from the workers, those people that are on the units, those people that are doing the work, as well as those people who are responsible for managing that work. That is a very critical component that has not been done in the past, which we are going to go forward. This will be an ongoing task force, empowering this group to make some decisions, make recommendations to the management staff. I agree with you, communication is so critical, Senator, that we need to hear from the workers. We need to have their opinions. We need to have their suggestions. They're the ones. They're the ones that are the frontline people. Mm-hmm. They are the ones giving the care. They know more. They have a very good understanding, and we need to use that resource to our advantage. So I assure you, we are going to do that.
No way.
This is not an acceptable situation anywhere. We understand that, and we take that very serious. We are trying to get the right people in the right roles, doing the right job. We do need that monitoring, and RNs do monitor the work of LPNs, HSTs, to assure that quality care is being delivered to the veteran. We take that very serious. That is our charge. The safety of our veterans is very, very important to us, and we are making steps to communicate and to work in a conducive manner with all staff at the facility. We don't want any adversarial roles. You know, there is the management staff has their responsibility to manage the facility. The workers have the responsibility to provide the care, and we need to work as one team. And that is our intentions from this point on.
Senator Erickson Ropes,
thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow up. Thank you. I really appreciate hearing that teamwork is something that you're going to be trying to work towards. And, you know, again, I would just say if this were a traditional nursing home, it would be bad enough. But it seems to me that, you know, with, you know, as we're talking about veterans, you know, there are people who worked in teams, and they worked with their XOs and COs and platoon commanders and that sort of thing. And yet I cannot imagine any unit that had failed its mission for 2 or 3 years in a row and failed inspections that would just be allowed to pretty much continue going on and on and on without having a lot of very dramatic changes. I can't imagine from some of these older vets' perspectives, and either the vets on your board and veteran family members, that this is just not acceptable.
Madam Chair, Senator, again, I agree with you. It is not acceptable, and it will not be tolerated. We need to change the image. We need to change the culture. And we need to make sure we are providing the best care for our veterans. They deserve it.
Senator Corn.
Madam Chair, thank you. You know, I guess I have to also weigh in and say what my two colleagues on either side of me have said, because I got to tell you, when I go home on the weekends, I tend to be out and amongst my constituents, and I tend to go to the Legion, or I'll go to the VFW, and the bond that which I will never understand because I wasn't in the service, but the bond that there is between people that have been in the service is something that only people that have served will understand. And people ask me at the Legion and the VFW, they say, "What the hell is going on here?" And that something needs to be done. And so I have a question to the chair of, and I've been on this committee for 4 years, and it seems like it has been going on. Madam Chair, what can we do, or what is, I know our responsibility is oversight. You know, do we just have charge of the purse strings, or should heads roll, or what should we, what can we do to help facilitate this in a timely manner would be my question to the chair.
Well, Senator Coring, this committee is in charge of the appropriations for the Veterans Homes Board, which includes the Minneapolis Home. I think that we've been pretty responsive in that department. I don't hear people complaining about, you know, we asked for something and you didn't give it to us and now, you know, we're having a problem. I do not myself believe, at least at this point in time, that the problem is resources. Now, I am not entirely sure in my own mind that the deployment of the resources have been exactly hitting the mark. And so it's very difficult for us, however, to move from being a legislative branch into, you know, the daily workings of these homes. I mean, that really is an executive branch mm-hmm. function. And we can ask questions, we can make suggestions, we can, you know, we can tie some of the money to future performance, perhaps. We can compare this facility to others that mm-hmm. are in the community. But you know, I believe that our major responsibility is one of holding people accountable. And I think we have a pretty good track record of having continual oversight hearings in regard to this issue. Going back to 2005 when, and I still believe to this day, even though there was never any admission of it, that there was money being withheld from the Minneapolis home. There were vacancies that were not being filled in order to create reserves at the board level. And I'm still not entirely sure whether all of those vacancies have actually been filled. It would be good if somebody could give us an accounting of that, I think. I mean, it was my assumption with the appropriation of the $4 million last year that would be done. But exactly how many of those positions were filled mm-hmm. isn't still real clear to me. I know that there was only one and a half nursing positions filled, and I know that there were more than one and a half nursing positions that were held vacant.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, if I could just say, and I know that you guys know this, but you know, when we're asking somebody to join the military and put their lives on the line, and we can't even come through for them on something as simply as their care, you know, I don't know why anybody would want to join the military. If we're not going to follow through with the promises that we've made, why would they even join the military? So, and then I would just, I do have a question. I'm wondering, you know, if you're, it's the same here. If your staff is beat down and, you know, if you don't thank your staff and you don't appreciate your staff, well, that's the kind of quality of work you're going to get. Not very good. And so I'm wondering, what's the staff morale and what do you do? You know, when you were here last time, I thanked the staff members. And there was a staff member sitting back here. And after the committee was over with, I got up and she started to cry. She said, "Thank you. I've been here for 12 years and nobody's ever thanked me." So I want to know what the staff morale is. And I don't mean to get to seem, well, I am angry. But when I get home and I start hearing from my constituents who have served in the military, who their fellow comrades in arms are not being taken care of, they're upset, and it upsets me. So anyway, I'd like to know what the situation is with the staff, what the morale is, what you feel it is. So either one.
Madam Chair, Senator. Obviously, when you look, turn on the TV set and you see negative news media, you open the newspaper and you see print that isn't very favorable,
yep.
That is generalizing the entire staff, the entire agency into one picture. does not help morale. Morale is not good. Morale needs to be improved. That's one of those things that we need to do. We are going to work at that to our best of our abilities, but we have to get rid of the negative. Every time I turn on a certain news channel, there we are. Mm-hmm. And that's not acceptable. And it's not their fault. They report the news, and this is news. But it's going to take some time to build the morale because, well, every staff at the home has been painted with the same brush. I assure you there are some very, very good employees working day in and day out to care for our veterans. There's a few issues, there's a few problems, and that's what we need to address. And that's what we're going to address, Senator. Again, I believe and I know I spent 18 years of my life at the Veterans Home in Minneapolis. It is a good facility. It has very good people in it doing the job. We will fix the problems, whether it be in staffing, whether it be in how we deliver care, we will fix it, and we will fix it right. And, yes, the staff need to be thanked. But right now, again, without sounding like a broken record, our biggest priority is getting those citations fixed.
Mr. Cox, you have hired the Health Dimensions organization to come in now to act as administrator of the home. I have a lot of confidence in Health Dimensions. They've done a lot of, I mean, they are the organization that usually is brought in to take over any nursing home that is having their ownership removed from them. So I do have a lot of confidence in them. I think that you said that they are also the organization that has been doing your mock surveys. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
So will they continue to also do the mock surveys if they are administering the facility?
Madam Chair, the first thing that to clarify is that Health Dimensions will come in and assist our managers. They will not be taking over control of the facility. This facility will still remain in the hands of the state. They will assist the administration to identify systems and issues and help rebuild those that are broken. We also have a clinical component of Health Dimensions coming in, and they will identify clinical issues very much similar to how the mock surveys operated. And so we will look at additional systems and repair them as necessary, again, resulting in better care of the resident.
And have they made any recommendations to you thus far? You say they've been in there helping you even before you signed a contract with them.
We have two contracts going. We have the Health Dimensions contract for the mock surveys. We have a management contract that will go into effect Monday morning with Health Dimensions. So we have two contracts. One will be expiring this weekend, and that is for the mock surveys, but the new contract with Health Dimensions will start Monday morning with the management oversight and clinical overview.
Well, during during this period of time that they've been advising you, have they made any recommendations
for changes? They have made numerous recommendations for changes, and we have worked very closely with them to implement their suggestions, to get the proper tools developed and the training for the staff so that resident care, again, can be better.
I think it would be useful to this committee if we could see what the recommendations are that they've made and we could see which ones of those recommendations have been implemented. Would that be possible?
Madam Chair, we can certainly make that available to you. And again, what they've been working on, as I mentioned earlier, are falls, range of motion, medication administration, incontinent issues, and skin integrity issues.
And so after they start their new role with you on Monday, will you not be having mock surveys done?
we will continue to have very similar services that we do have now, but it will not continue under the old contract.
So you'll be entering into another new contract with them?
A new contract that has been signed to be implemented Monday morning.
Madam Chair, that contract Monday morning will be for that management assistance. I think you're possibly referring, will the mock service continue? That contract being expired, that'll be on our agenda for discussion with the board next Thursday in regards to looking at another contract for mock surveys and whether or not that would be with HDG, excuse me, would be questionable or if it would just go out for an RFP to look at other agencies and redo that whole process again.
Okay.
We'll be discussing that at next Thursday's board meeting.
But you do intend to continue to fulfill the rider that required you to have at least two mock surveys annually at the Minneapolis home?
That would be the intention, Madam Chair. The focus to Minneapolis and the availability of that contract being in place was the direction and discussion with Mr. Cox. What can we do to get more into Minneapolis to assist us with these deficiencies, with the citations? Can we look at a focused mock survey, which would then allow us to get in on that incontinence, which is an issue none of us were pleased with, and the different things that Mr. Cox had mentioned earlier. Having that in place, we redirected to focused mock surveys at the Minneapolis campus, and with that came the additional training and things that the staff were able to get right up front. That's where the focused mock survey came in, to be able to utilize that. So we still need to look at what we were directed in regards to the mock surveys, but we'll probably have to develop another contract in order to be able to accomplish that.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking these questions is because the issue of whether the things that you have done will stay fixed, I think, is a paramount concern here. And the mock surveys were a tool for you to be able to monitor yourself to understand whether things that needed fixing were still a problem. And so I think going forward that you're going to continue to need to have that tool.
Madam Chair, we would definitely agree with that.
Senator Vickerman, welcome to the
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hearing this morning.
Madam Chair, if I may, I don't, and maybe it's out of order, and I'll probably be chastised for it later, but Senator Coring brought up a couple things that I think each and every one of us, to include the veterans organizations, we have those here. Myself as a Vietnam vet, everybody's upset. Mm-hmm. My brothers and my fellow sisters,
mm-hmm.
my veteran here. Family, we're upset. The board is made up of veterans. They are upset. Mr. Cox may not be a veteran, but he's probably one of the strongest veteran advocates that I've ever met, with the exception of Senator Vickerman. We're all upset about this. And there is that bond, Senator Coring. And
and
whether I be chastised for this later or not, I want to acknowledge, sir, that you recognize that. And I can't explain it either.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, a fellow veteran, I've been up here this week, and part of what I did was walk the halls. We have members of our board that are actually volunteers at the Minneapolis campus because they want to be with their fellow veteran. Do we get asked, why do you continue to do this when it just does? Because we want to make that difference. We want to help Mr. Cox and his staff make that difference. And as far as the committee, sir, Madam Chair, we can do nothing but thank you. Last year you helped us with that $4 million. We utilized it the way we were directed and to make the best use of that. Without this committee, without Senator Vickerman, what we have done. So I think you are doing your job, sir,
okay. And
your committee, Madam Chair. We thank you for that. The work that's been done thus far on the budget this year, we took the direction of Senator Vickerman's committee, Senator Berglund's committee, And what we heard was, you got to tell us what you need. And that's the direction that the board established with our administrators and our executive director. Let's do it both ways. And you've heard this last time, but we thank you for that opportunity, and we took your lead. We took your direction. We gave the one that you're supposed to do, and then this is truly what the needs are. And so far, I understand that things are proceeding pretty good. The governor's recommended budget would be absolutely what the homes will be able to utilize and fix and make sure the funds are available to be able to repair some of these situations. So whether, Madam Chair, I apologize for the line, but I just did not want to leave Senator Coring with this, that veteran thing, because it is a passion.
Well, and I can just also remind members because, you know, in the last legislative session, it was one bill, and so you all weren't there, but on the conference committee, but the House did not fully fund the request last year. The Senate did. And so we were then in a position of trying to help get the House to do the right thing. And we were not entirely successful, but we were pretty much successful in getting the request met. It was a very strange situation. But, of course, you need to remember also that we were still in a deficit. And so these dollars were coming out of other programs and other needs, and it was a difficult situation. One of the reasons that I keep harking back to the staffing and the systems is because I know that the Veterans Home in Minneapolis staffs equally across the board. And I know that other nursing homes don't do that. They look at the acuity of the patients, and based on acuity, more nursing hours are provided. And it only makes sense that you need to do that. I mean, if you've got several people with acute diabetes on a ward and you don't have that type of patient on another ward, you're obviously going to need more nursing hours. And I mean not just nursing assistant hours. You're going to need more RN hours to take care of monitoring that diabetic patient's needs. And so I think that that is one of the issues that needs to be fully examined and fully brought up to speed. It is one of the differences between the Minneapolis home and the other homes. The other homes seem to be doing a lot better. You know, one can only come to the conclusion then that this needs to be changed at the Minneapolis home. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Cox. I don't want to repeat the same comments that have already been made by the other senators, other than to say also, as a veteran myself, how deeply disappointed I am. But I don't think I care any more about this issue than any of the other members of this committee who feel a very grave level of responsibility to our veterans. And without reiterating what's already been said, I'd like to add a disappointment in terms of communication with this committee. I'm very disappointed that the last time administration was here talking to us, we were led to believe that there were, in spite of previous inspection failures, that things were improving and that you were on top of things. And what I'm concerned about is that it took public exposure for us to find out that wasn't the case. And so as a committee, we rely on you to communicate with us when there are problems and then to try to help you fix them. If those problems are not being communicated to us, we're not in the position to be able to help you. And so it seemed also to me that there was an obvious tension between some of the concerns the nursing staff had and the administration, and part of the problem seemed to be some tension there, and I'm not hearing necessarily that that's been dealt with. So I guess my question is, if the administration was aware of the level of problem the last time you were here, why wasn't that communicated to us? And if you weren't aware, then I'm even more concerned, I guess. But either way, to me, that level of communication and straightforwardness with this committee is a concern, and I'd like to hear your response to that.
Madam Chair, Senator, we have been working very diligently, as I said earlier, to make improvements, and we have made improvements to the Veterans Home Minneapolis. We just haven't got to the brass ring yet. We haven't corrected everything, and we need to do that. We have corrected a number of citations. We do have 6 repeats that we need to get taken care of, and we're being fined on a daily basis until we take care of those. But we did clear a number of deficiencies from our from our survey, excuse me. And we will keep this committee informed of what's going on, but we have been working to clear the citations, to increase the quality of care that we can provide. We've got consultants in. We've got many different systems being implemented. We have a lot of training going on. Senator, the care is better at the Veterans Home.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
But, Mr. Cox, you haven't addressed my question. My question is very directly, last time you were here, did you know about the underlying issues that led to these citations? If you did, why weren't we told? If you didn't, then what's the explanation for why you wouldn't have known?
Madam Chair, Senator, we did know the extent. We had the citations in front of us. We knew exactly what citations, what areas we were having problems with, and we began working on those areas. As you begin to fix systems and fix ways of doing business, a way of giving care, you find other systems that have failed as well. Did we have every system failure identified last time? I don't believe so. But as we dug deeper and deeper to fix things from the ground up, we found more issues that we needed to deal with. So that's part of what you asked. Were we aware? Yes, we were aware overall of what the problems were. We were charged to fix those problems. We dug in and we started looking at the root cause analysis of these problems. And as we looked at one area, it became evident that there were some issues in other areas. So we've been rebuilding multitude of systems that will get us to that brass ring, and that is clearing the citations and getting back to a quality care facility.
Senator Erickson-Roltz.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cox and Mr. Johnson, people that know me know that I very rarely lose my temper, and my heart is just pounding right now because I don't think you're answering the senator's question. Why did this committee have to learn through the newspaper that there were 6 sentinel events that happened in the nursing home? You knew about those things when you reported to both committees the last time. And a sentinel event, for those of you who don't know, is an extremely serious patient event, like a doctor cutting off the wrong leg in surgery. That's a sentinel event. There were 6 sentinel events that happened out there at the Minneapolis Nursing Home, 3 of which resulted in death. We did not hear about that at either committee. And if we are going to have oversight, not only of appropriations, but if we are going to be in a position where we can help you and have oversight, well-intended or not, I'm really struggling with how in the world you could sit before this committee and not tell us about that. A report brought that to the public. We had to read about the newspaper. That's what we're talking about.
Madam Madam Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes and Senator Olson, the question, you know, whether it was directly answered or not, I think I understand your frustration, as it is ours also. The OHFC reports, the Sentinel and Vent reports, while that's in an ongoing investigation, we don't even know the outcome. I'm going to give you an example, and I don't know if that's any benefit or not, but as I sat in my office down in Jackson, I received a phone call from the news media wanting my opinion on the report that I wasn't even aware was out. So I share that same frustration. I'm sure Mr. Cox does. You know of the event, and Mr. Cox can explain that better perhaps for the rest of the committee, how that all starts, what that process is. But until that investigation is complete, and for whatever reason that's available right away, sometimes even before Mr. Cox might even know, or a board member may know, and it's in the public eye.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, what we're talking about is perhaps not the end result and report, but I think the committees need to be informed that these Sentinel events had at least occurred and they were under investigation.
And Madam Chair?
Senator?
Madam Chair?
Olson?
And Mr. Johnson, to follow up with that sentiment, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, that you sat here and told this committee that things were improving compared to the last inspection that you'd had. And actually, that turns out not to have been the case. And it sounds as though you knew that was not the case in terms of these events that led to these Sentinel events. And I guess I just want to reiterate that we have to have some communication and faith in the administration if we're going to be able to help you. And I would think that you could understand why this is, when we need to have an accurate view of the picture here and why we may feel that we didn't get that.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. The reporting mechanism, I mean, to report every Sentinel event, if that's the wishes, I mean, I'm not the expert on that. I don't even know the legal ramifications. So to be able to answer you directly on that, Senator, I don't have that answer, and I'm sorry. But as far as correction or an improvement, and my comments at other hearings that there have been improvements, there have been improvements. Have they reached the level that we need them to be? No. And I think Mr. Cox and other members and myself this morning have said it has not reached that level, but there has been improvement. In all fairness to the individuals that are working out there and the efforts that have been made, until the resurvey, when they came for the resurvey, we had good feelings and good hopes that those were corrected through all the efforts made by all the employees and administration alike. And they found additional. So there's improvement made, but it's not where it needs to be yet. None of us are satisfied with where it's at. And when they come in for this next reinspection, I hope and pray that we're there, and I know everyone else does.
Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cox, I think to be quite direct about Senator Olson's point, we held our last hearing to discuss the progress with you on January 11th. The veteran with the diabetes who died on January 4th. I think her point is that we should have probably been informed about that at that time.
Madam Chair, duly noted.
Other questions? Senator Laurie.
I was going to make a very similar point that, you might not have had the paper that described what happened, but the end result was death, and you did know that. And I have to go back. This might seem like a very small point, but one of the things, Mr. Johnson, that you said earlier was that Mr. Cox wasn't getting enough credit, wasn't taking enough credit, and that you cited as evidence of that he was there at 6:30 last night. Is that right? 6:30 last night. I mean, I'm sorry. You should be there at midnight, going home, getting a couple of hours of restless sleep and getting back in there at 5 a.m. I mean, we're in crisis situation here. 6:30 last night doesn't give me the comfort level that you're treating this with the level of severity that it is.
Madam Chair, Senator Laurie, that was just an example. Our staff has been there countless hours to midnight. As an example, one of our assistant administrators was there for 26 hours straight, and Mr. Cox had to ask her to go home to get 2-3 hours of sleep. So that was just an example, Senator Laurie. There's been countless, to include weekends and everything else. We truly, sir, take this extremely seriously at every level.
Other questions? Senator Prettner-Solon?
Madam Chair, I have to say, though, that Mr. Cox, you've lost credibility with us, and you gentlemen have failed. You don't in any way give us any confidence that things are really changing. You just keep saying, I hope things are changing. And I don't see your direction changing from where you were when you were here earlier this year or in years past. And things haven't changed. Things have just gotten worse. I would like to see something that indicates that things really are going to change there. We have had hearings when we've had the line staff here saying we need more staffing, we need more RNs. We haven't heard that any of that has ever been incorporated. And I have a sense that that there isn't a true dialogue that goes along with your staff, that it's truly a top-down type of organization. And I want something that will convince me that things really are turning around.
Other questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
I just want to remind the committee that the Senate Agriculture and Veterans Budget Division is going to be funding a full-time ombudsman at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Right now there's a half-time staff person there, and this usually goes through Senator Berglund's committee for funding, but the Veterans Committee believes it's so important to have an impartial, independent advocate at the nursing home every day, full-time, that we're going to be funding that position full-time for 2 years so that family members and staff or management, anyone can come to this independent ombudsman and register any concerns that they have. So just want to put that out there.
Madam Chair,
Senator Coring.
I would just want to know if we could, you know, if Senator Vickerman, I'd certainly like to hear from the chairman if he wants to weigh in. Would that be appropriate, or if he has anything to say?
Senator Vickerman can feel free to participate.
And I want to say that we're really glad to have him here.
Madam Chair, I don't think anybody in this group is feels as bad as I do when I got the notice at 3:05 that the first report came out, how bad it was. Upsets me to a point because I'm only a phone call or an email away. There's a lack of communication between that board and myself. And my committee controls the board. We don't control the other part of that. My only hope is, and I'm going to insist on it, if that is going to get straightened up. I'm putting a lot of money into veterans, and I'm starting to hear comments, all the money didn't do any good. So something has to be done, and I'm not going to be here to point fingers. That doesn't gain us anything, but I want some answers. I haven't scheduled a meeting in my committee. I'm waiting for the report. The report come out. I haven't had time to look at the full report. I'm going to look at the report. Then I'm going to make a decision if we need to call you before my committee. If we're just going to call you here and put blame you and blame her or blame him and that, that doesn't do any good. I want it straightened out. Part of the thing that I'm picking up, and I'm not an expert, I'm not a nurse, I'm just a farmer by trade, that there's morale there is terrible. You ought to be able to be happy to work in that place, because when you work for the state, the benefits and everything else come along with it. You should be a great pride. And it's, I'm missing that out there. And I'll end up with this. I couldn't eat cold scrambled eggs myself. When I see that in the paper, that's totally unacceptable. Something has to be done. And then, you know, you can't always believe the paper. But the paper said, what are we going to do with it? Well, heat it up. Everybody's got a microwave. It wouldn't take too much of a genius to warm eggs up. So something has to be done. And I've got quite a bit of money that's going into this veterans program. But it bothers me when I try to do that. Then I look on this side of it and said, well, is our money really doing any good? And that's what we have to look at. And I think there's a line of lack of communication between both of you in my office. I need to know what's going on out there. I shouldn't have to drive out there and find out what's going on, because I hear a different story when I talk to people that work there and I talk to veterans that live there. Even veterans have different stories there. So something has to be done, and I'm not going to wait 2, 3, 4 months. I want that done, and I want that done now.
So, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cox, we will expect that when the Veterans Administration does come back in to do their resurvey sometime between now and the end of March, that we would be notified of the fact that they were there and the outcome.
Madam Chair, definitely.
Other comments or questions? Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to ask you to answer this question. Would you tell me very succinctly two things? One, what do you think is the essential problem that needs to be addressed, the root cause, the thing that you need to go from here and address in your organization that will impact change in relationship to the kinds of problems that are described here, which talk about proficiency of nursing aides and about the capacity of your staff to perform the functions and the responsibilities and engage in the judgments that are necessary around medication administration, for example, or treatment programs? What, without talking about, we're all talking about being very concerned and very caring about this, but what I want to hear is, out of that caring, what is it that is the central thing that needs to be done in order to stop this process from continuing? What's that? And then the second question I ask is, what is the central message that you think you've heard from this group today?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'll address the first question. The one thing that we need to do at the Veterans Home in Minneapolis is we need to provide training to our staff to assure that each person understands what they need to do in their role to care for our veterans. We have, and I've been talking about this, and I'm sure you're tired of hearing it, we've had a lot of systems that have failed. That is where we're putting our focus right now, is rebuilding the systems with training and expectations. The key component after that is put in place is the monitoring. Are people doing cares the way that they were trained? Monitoring is a very important part. But right now we need to focus on the training aspect. We need to make sure that the people have the correct tools to do their job.
And Madam Chair, may I just ask, are you saying to me that you don't have, are you saying then that you do not now have staff that are hired based on their competency and their training to do nursing care?
Madam Chair, Senator, I did not say that we do not. We hire untrained professionals. Each person comes to us with their particular profession, and that's why we hire them. but there are procedures, consistent procedures that need to be done to assure that quality care is provided across the board. How do we do the assessments for the ball and bladder program? How does the entire facility do it? We need to make sure that is consistent so every person is assessed in the same manner, using the same assessment tools and those types of things. It's internal training that is specific to our facility and our residents. We have very highly trained staff, professional staff, but what is lacking is how do we do it all the same? How does this floor and this floor care for their residents?
And just back to the matter of communication, I think, you know, we've been hard on you about that. I think it is warranted, but I also will say that I think that it's a lot better than it was when we had our hearing in 2005. I would say that level of communication was avoidance. And we haven't seen that going on. I think it might not be at the level that it should be at here, but it's better than it was when we started having these oversight hearings.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that very much, and I'm sure the rest of the board and all the staff would too. We've tried to be very transparent and ensure that the information is there. Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Sheeran, I believe you had a twofold question.
Thank you.
And the central message. I hear communication, and we have tried to be as transparent as we can. If we need to direct some of that specifically to the chairs, we can do that. That's not a problem. We try to communicate as much as we possibly can. Central message, concern, the need for results, good care, and oversight to try and prevent repeats. That's the common theme, the common message that I have heard here.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and gentlemen. Senator Sheeran, I appreciate your question because, you know, we've been discussing this a long time today, and I think what Senator Sheeran was saying, what's the bottom line, what's the root cause, where do you need to concentrate your efforts? And if you need to concentrate your efforts on training your staff so that we don't continue to have these quality of care issues, and considering that a great number of the citations have to do with facility administration, and if your number one challenge and your root cause is training, then I couldn't be more pleased to see that the Health Dimensions Group is coming in, because this is an ongoing problem, and if it's been years, not weeks, not months, but years, and we still do not have the ability to train the staff, then perhaps the assistance from the Health Dimensions Group is exactly what is needed, because clearly we don't have in place the trainers to accomplish this mission.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just also like to go back to say that even now, at the end of this meeting, I continue to be very disappointed because I have not heard anyone from administration accept any responsibility for what's going on out there and say, this is what we were doing wrong. This is where we've made our mistakes as administrators. And we've recognized that, and we identify it, and this is what we're going to do differently in the future. Because when you talk about training your staff, it seems to me that, again, cutting through the chase, what you're really saying is it's the nurse's fault. And maybe I'm misinterpreting that, but a lot of what you were talking about seems to me to be, and again, I'm not a nurse, but seems to be something that would be helped if you had an RN available to be supervising and doing more of the kinds of things that you were describing. And that was exactly the concern that was raised to us last time when we had this hearing. And it's not going to get better if we can if we hear from nursing staff that there's still that tension between administration and nursing as far as and caregiving as far as finger pointing or not accepting responsibility where it needs to be acknowledged.
Senator Olson, I will say this. You know, since we began this series of oversight hearings in 2005, there have been a lot of people who have lost their jobs at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. And the most recent one, of course, was the most recent director, Bob Wicken, was terminated on Wednesday. So, you know, you have to begin asking yourself after a while, the problems must be deeper and broader than just whoever the administrator of the home is. And, you know, sometimes you have to also kind of wonder if continually changing the administration of the home is, you know, every time they do this, then it's like you go back to go and you start again. And I mean, whoever comes in has to get up to speed with all the people working there and everything that they do there and all the procedures there. And, you know, maybe about the time they've gotten all that down and have started making some changes, they're gone. And then there's somebody else and you start over again. I certainly don't disagree that, you know, the administration needs to be held accountable and responsible, but I am not at the point where I'm ready to have confidence that just changing the administration is going to get us there, because it hasn't gotten us there in the past when we've changed administrators. Senator Lurie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go back to the training again, and my take is we have colleges and really well-defined, effective training programs around the state, and the healthcare professionals that come out of these programs go all around the state and provide a very high level of care to nursing home residents all across the state. I think you guys need to make sure that you're hiring the appropriate level of staff with the skills needed to properly care for your residents. I mean, if you're having to do the training in-house, and that's your number one thing that you're focusing on, I think you might not have hired the right level of staff.
Well, in fairness, Senator Lurie, most nursing homes do provide continuing education for their staff. You know, it is a continuous quality improvement effort. I don't know in the past how much the Minneapolis home has been doing training or not. I don't know how the efforts they make at training compare to other facilities.
Madam Chair, Senator, when I said training, it's training to our internal policy and procedures of how to care for residents at our facility. It's not the global professional experience that you would, an RN goes to school to achieve. We're talking about how do we do things internally so that we consistently give care and that the reporting systems are in place, and how do sentinel events get handled, and how do issues on a day-to-day basis, how is that communicated? That's what I'm talking about when I talk about training. I'm not talking about the competency of an LPN, RN, or an HSD. I'm talking about how they do their job day-to-day. And we hire very capable and qualified personnel, but they do need to be trained as to how the facility cares for its veterans. How does the communication happen? How does the nurse, relay information from shift to shift about the status of those residents? That is the training I'm trying to say is our number one priority, to make sure that everything is consistent, that the care is there. And that's what I say. I do not want anyone to believe that I do not think the people we hire are qualified. That the training's internally. It's internal procedures, it's internal policies, it's how we're going to care and make sure that somebody doesn't fall through the cracks in the area of care. I hope I made that clear. I had no intentions of belittling or saying that we hired unqualified people. Our people are very qualified. I want to make that very clear. Thank you.
Senator, Madam Chair, could I add one more?
Senator Vickerman.
My committee, we have X millions of dollars to work for veterans. We're trying to key in on the new Iraqi veterans that are coming back, 3,600 or so, are all at once going to come back to the state. We're trying to help with their lives. Then I got to turn around and listen to the veterans out there are not getting the treatment that we'd kind of like to have them have. And then you look at the news, and Walter Reed Hospital is terrible. There's something wrong with the system. Something is definitely wrong with the system.
Well, Senator Vickerman, if you want to add to your list of disappointments, I, for one, am just terribly disappointed that this country that has been relying on National Guard troops to bear the major responsibility for the war in Iraq does not provide them with health care at all. I mean, the only way they get health care when they come back is if they have had, you know, a serious injury. And I just think that's shameful of our country. But that's not, you know, we're doing what we can to try to make sure they get Minnesota care. And, but, you know, they shouldn't be relying on a Minnesota care program. The national government should make sure that those people that have served us have the health care they need. They deserve it. They should have it. It should be provided by the federal government. I mean, I just think it's, well, we have other people that need to testify, but just suffice to say that I don't think that we were ever prepared for the adventure that we have engaged in, and I don't think we've ever taken it seriously enough, the after effects of it.
Well, Madam Chair, just to follow up on that, I think it's going to be your committee's job and my committee's job to try and figure out if we can help some way, because I don't see the federal government stepping forward. They're all talk, but they don't come with the money. Look at the paper today. Down in Georgia, the guy has been waiting and waiting for his disability check. Lost his house and everything else. There's something wrong with the system. Mm-hmm. And it really bothers me because Minnesota has always been the best veteran state. We've got the nicest nursing homes. And then all at once, we get blackballed. There's something wrong. And Madam Chair, before we adjourn, I'm going to see that that's straightened out. And I ask you to help me do that.
Certainly, Senator Vickerman. I can tell you this. You know, one of the biggest surprises, well, I mean, there were so many that it's hard to say the biggest, but one of the most surprising things to me last session when we went to conference committee last year was that the House would not even accept the provision that would have given veterans a year of premium-free Minnesota care. They wouldn't even accept that expansion of eligibility, as they put it. I can guarantee you one thing. That's going to happen this year. That's going to happen this year. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for you and Senator Vickerman as chairs. Senator Vickerman is the Ag and Veterans Committee, and we have oversight and are interested in veterans because of the health care piece. I'm wondering, and the same thing is true on the House side. When we get this next big report, I wonder if it would be appropriate for us legislatively to hold a bicameral joint hearing so that all of the members of all the committees, for one thing, have a chance to meet each other, and then, but get the report at the same time.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, there's been much discussion about trying to do more joint hearings in a number of areas. It's very difficult because the schedules are so different. And there's not a lot of time in the schedule when people aren't in committees. And so it would require them, would require those members then not to be at other committee meetings that they're supposed to be at in order to attend a joint hearing. And, of course, now it's even more difficult because we're running into deadlines. And So I think perhaps we might be able to do more of that during the interim. And I do plan to keep following up on this issue. I think it requires and needs to have continuing oversight. It isn't just that we bring you back here when the news is bad. It's just that all the news has been bad. But we do intend to keep bringing you back so that if you are achieving your goals, that we can hear about that as well.
Madam Chair, if I could just say one other thing. I guess I would like to make a request that after session is over with, that maybe this committee and Senator Vickerman's committee go to the nursing home or to the veterans home and take a tour and be very engaged.
Yes, Senator Coring, I think that'd be a good idea, not only in terms of, seeing the staff and the operations, but the buildings. Mm-hmm. Or something to behold also. I mean, you haven't really seen the Minneapolis Veterans Home until you've walked around the sewers.
Oh, I'll look forward to that.
Just one more clarifying question to sort of orient me. You've talked about the creating redundancy in your systematic processes for how you address blood glucose levels, for example, or other kinds of factors that would cue a nurse to engage in an intervention. That you're saying that the issues need to be to train everybody to follow a consistent process that has redundancy in it, and through that you reduce the error outcome. And I understood to be what the training issue is that you're talking about. So and that's assumed to have correctly identified the root cause problem. My last question, because I know there are others who are here, is I wasn't sure in the set of problems that we have here, is it narrowed to specific units that you're finding a specific one or two units that are struggling, or is it system wide?
Madam Chair, Senator, the problems are very isolative and widespread. They're not limited to one area.
So system-wide.
Yep. And it's one or two residents that were identified that did not meet the standards here. It was not tens of residents. It was one or two residents. Again, those residents that slipped through that crack that we gotta tighten up so they don't.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sitting here, I have a very simple mind, and you have five veterans homes and one that has some severe deficiencies. And I guess I'm looking at it, and please excuse me with this simplistic attitude, but as a business, why do we have one that's so far off and four that that have no deficiencies? And who's the oversight on this? I was going to ask the same question that Senator Sharon asked, is, funnel it down to what is the main problem here. So if you have five businesses like this and one is really skewed, I guess I'm just not getting the connect here, why it is so bad. I mean, you talk about the electronic care process or program and the staffing, but there should be some consistency between all five, and I'm not seeing that or hearing that. Is there a mechanism for consistency with all five veterans' homes?
Well, Senator, if I can just start off by reminding ourselves that each of these homes are in different communities, and if you work at the Veterans Home in Fergus Falls, it is a good job. It's the best job or one of the best jobs in that community. Mm-hmm. So they don't have as much turnover in their staff. And in the hearing we had earlier, you would see that they don't have as many vacant positions. The Minneapolis home, due to its location, there's a lot more job opportunities available to people. The nurses at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, who were sick and tired of it and left in 05, went to work for hospitals in the metropolitan area, getting just as good, if not better, pay, and just as good, if not better, health insurance, and just as good, if not better, pension benefits. So, you know, part of the problem that I see at the Minneapolis Veterans Home is that they, even if they have enough complement approved for that home, they have vacancies. What's the vacancy today at the Minneapolis home? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I do not know the total vacancy today.
Well, I know the last time we had the hearing in January, it was between 40 and 45 vacant positions. I mean, that's, you know, that means that they're not staffed at the same level that the other homes are staffed at. And then they have these other systems issues as well. And I really have not ever been able to tell, based on the data I've received, about the acuity of the patients. I don't know if the acuity of the patients is about the same or different. I mean, I know it's different at Hastings. Hastings is a domiciliary facility, so definitely the acuity of care there is less. But at the other homes where they have skilled beds, I can't really tell.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I understand part of your question is you're an agency, you're a corporation type question. Mm-hmm. And the four homes and one being in, we as a board over the last 2 years, specifically as Senator Berglund since the 5th, July 05, and some of the changes that have been made are to put functional committees in place, quality assurance, finance. The budget process has been entirely different than it has in the past. The special review committee for special projects, recruiting the executive director, administrators, those type of things. One of the things that, as a board member, that I've been able to see, one, is a change in the individuals that have been put on the board, highly skilled, whether it be in finance, in the consulting areas and whatever. So that's been very fortunate. And with that has come a direction that says, you know, we need that individuality of each one of the homes, but yet we are an agency. And as a board member, I like my reports to show very similar, and does the other members of the board. So part of those changes are occurring and continue to occur, and then you fine-tune them some more. So I think Senator, Madam Chair, answered it pretty good, because down in Laverne, that's one of the places you want to work. You know, it's one of the premier jobs in that area, even as close as they are to Sioux Falls with the McKinnons and the Sioux Valley healthcare systems. But it's still a great place. Senator Berglund, I appreciate the way you answered that, because I think that is part of the problem in Minneapolis with the turnover. But we continue to try and standardize more of that corporate look so that our reports are standardized. The Quality Assurance Committee and the Finance Committee working on some of these benchmarking things that right now they continue to, that sits there. But we've taken the resources from many of our other homes and made them available to Minneapolis to try and bring that same type. As an example, the falls prevention in Silver Bay is quite successful. Mr. Cox has asked that the administrator there have his people come down and assist with some of that system development. So utilizing the expertise, and not always just the consultants, but our own people who are excellent themselves. So I don't know if that answers part of that question, Senator.
Thank you.
I guess maybe to kind of go along with that, Mr. Cox is an interim executive director. Do you know when you intend to have a permanent director for the board?
Madam Chair, the special review committee has been recruiting for that position for quite some time, as you're aware.
It might be a little difficult to fill under the circumstances.
That is part of the difficulty. In addition, By statute, the requirement is that the executive director must be a veteran. That has narrowed that pool nationwide search because there's not a lot of, you know, you narrow it because it has to be a veteran.
Do you think that's a good requirement?
We have, through our veterans organizations, and they support it, there's legislation that's supposed to be tracking, I think is tracking, through your system of bills and requesting to clean up some of that. One, that the executive director would not have preferred but not required to be a veteran. In addition, currently the way that reads is the chairman of this board could not be a veteran. And the requirement then from the veterans organizations, from the board itself, would that the chair should be a veteran. ED, no. Chair, yes. And then cleaned up some other parts of that requirement of veteran, no veteran also. The recruiting process has been long and difficult. We have a national search firm that is working with that committee. At our last board meeting, we did have, two candidates that did come for the full board to interview. Unfortunately, both candidates we were quite excited about and pleased with. Unfortunately, one of those candidates has withdrawn. So we will continue the search because I think it's important that we have more than one candidate to choose from. So there again, we're extremely fortunate to have Mr. Cox to step up initially in that role of still being out in Hastings plus at the board office, and this is a busy time of year. We need our executive director up here, but to spend as much time out of Minneapolis as possible, we're extremely fortunate. And I think that's helped us get further than it would have necessarily been.
So, Mr. Cox, you are still fulfilling your responsibilities as a director at Hastings.
Madam Chair, my shingle is still hung in Hastings. And I have appointed someone to be the acting administrator in Hastings for the time being, so I can devote more of my time to the executive director responsibilities and also assist Minneapolis with the correction of their citations.
Members, we do have other people that we want to hear from today. So I know that Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cox will be here if we have more questions at the end of our hearing. This might be a good time to thank you and to ask for Darcy Minor.
Madam Chair, may I indulge upon you to Senator Olson? I would hate to leave the table and Mr. Cox pass for anyone. And I think we have at the last committee hearings and whatever, the board, our staff, our administration, I believe we have accepted ownership of this problem and accepted the responsibility and the accountability. We realize we are responsible, and it's our responsibility to move this forward and get it where it needs to be. So we do accept accountability.
I agree. We're not going to let you do any less.
I wouldn't expect that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen. Darcy Minor.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Madam Chair, I was prepared this morning to do a brief history of many of the events that we've already been referring to, and I'm not sure that you want me to still do that. I also am prepared to do a brief overview of what my staff has been doing at the home.
Yes, I think we'd be interested to hear about that.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm Darcy Minor. I'm the director of the Compliance Monitoring Division of the Department of Health. As of February 28th, I have had several staff members out at the veterans' home pretty much around the clock to monitor the care, and as we were directed by the governor's office, to also intervene as necessary. without being too, without going into too much detail, I would like to just give a quick explanation of the various sections within my division, because I think it's helpful to understand the different roles that they have and how we've used the different people in this situation. The Compliance Monitoring Division includes the licensing and certification area, which is comprised of nurses who go out and do the regular surveys of all the certified and licensed facilities, using both federal or state licensure requirements as appropriate to that facility. The Office of Health Facility Complaints, which was mentioned here earlier, is also comprised of nurses who respond to complaints or facility reports about incidents at facilities. They go out and investigate and determine whether or not an allegation is substantiated or inconclusive or not substantiated. Case mix review is another group of nurses who also go out to facilities on a regular basis, but their survey responsibilities include assisted living and home care providers, but they also are in nursing homes on a regular basis, because in the course of a year, that staff reviews 15% of the cases to make sure that the we talked about acuity here, that the MDS reports that reflect acuity of care are accurate, and therefore that the payment that's being paid for those residents is accurate. So the case mix review staff tends to, on their reviews of assisted living and other facilities, they, because it is state licensure only, they are in a better position. They tend to have more conversation when they're out. They can do a little more instruction and education, whereas the survey staff that goes out about licensure really just observes, monitors, takes notes, and then later on determines whether or not there were any deficient practices. They don't provide technical assistance while they're on site. It's really more just to observe and monitor and then give the official feedback about what they saw. Given those different roles, we had had our survey staff out there in November. As you know, Madam Chair, we were here to report on that in January. We had also had our OHFC staff out to investigate complaints that had been submitted. So when we were asked to monitor the care, we asked the case mix staff, who had not yet been out there and so in some ways were neutral. They could come into it just looking at the cares and seeing what types of feedback they might want to give. Since noon on February 28th, we've had case mix nursing staff out at the facility pretty much around the clock, certainly present for at least part of every shift. What they have been doing is the first couple of days, they were interviewing staff, residents, administration, just to try and get a feel for the facility. In addition, they spend time on the units, observing cares, again, talking with staff, interviewing residents and families. The means that we have used to give them feedback has generally been that we connect back with the director of nursing each day and give her input about any concerns that we had or any issues that we saw, so that if there is a change that's necessary, it can be made at a system-wide level rather than having just a one-on-one conversation between one of our staff and an individual nurse or aide who then might change their procedure, but it wouldn't be system-wide. And as we've heard this morning, it's really more a matter of the system that we're looking at. So we have observed some things. In addition, we completed the reinspection and actually exited the facility the day before we began this monitoring. So we were out there until, I think, from February 20th till 27th in an official capacity to do a reinspection from the survey that we'd conducted in November. You all are familiar, I believe, with what we found. I'll do a quick recap that of the there had been 26 violations that we had cited in November. 20 of those were corrected when we went back in February. So I think that's a significant improvement and does speak to that attention has been given to change some of those systems and some of those issues that we saw. The six that we reissued and that now are generating penalties on a daily basis are also significant. They included residents not receiving CARES in accordance to their plan. They included the rehabilitation, nursing care, the range of motion issues that has been talked about, I believe, and that was more of a, if there was a clear direction in a resident's care plan about what range of motion they were to be receiving, it was unclear among staff as to whether it was a nurse's responsibility, an aide's responsibility, or who was actually to be giving the CARES. Consequently, in some cases, the CARES were not documented, nor had they been given. Pressure ulcers remained an issue. There had been some improvement since November, but for the residents that we actually looked at, there still were some issues. The medication errors that had been observed and actually documented in the complaints from the Office of Health Facility Complaints, we noticed that there still were med errors, some of them involving insulin. There also were errors about labeling of medication, and when doses had been changed per doctor's orders, the labels weren't always changed to reflect that. There were Bill of Rights concerns reissued when we were out in February around courteous treatment of residents. That, at the state licensing level, that covers a broad range of things that include residents not being properly dressed, slow response to call lights, and other examples. There had been some issues observed during dining where residents were not assisted in a timely fashion, as was noted in the newspaper. And finally, the sixth repeat violation was a failure to report under the Vulnerable Adults Act. In this case, it was the previous citation was failure to report missing property from residents, and in February there was a failure to report an allegation of physical abuse. So those were the six repeat violations. Madam Chair, I don't know if you want me now to do the, I mean, there were three new correction orders that were issued. Let's see. And I'll find those in just a moment. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I have too many papers here. And I know there's a summary here. The new correction orders, again, my apologies. The new correction orders were for adequate and proper nursing care that was this talks about that residents should receive care based on their individual needs. In February, when we were out, there were concerns identified about properly assessing and evaluating residents, and in particular regarding ways to minimize the chance that residents would fall. There had been several incidents where residents had fallen, and so this led us to look into whether or not there was a system in place that would help prevent those falls. The proper labeling of medications was a new concern, and then again we cited a new instance of reporting or investigating reports of maltreatment, and this one was that the facility has a policy about reporting those events, but had failed to follow their own policy. We continue to be out there pretty much around the clock.
Ms. Meitner, while you're out there, are you are you, excuse me, are you needing to, is your staff needing to intervene to provide cares that otherwise would not be attended to?
Madam Chair, the staff has intervened in some instances, and I can give you a couple of those. One was last week during the snowstorm. A resident was observed to be sitting outside without a coat. He was in his wheelchair, and he was smoking. And so our staff got an aide to help bring that person inside. One of our nurses actually was in the right place at the right time to catch a resident as she was falling. So, I mean, there have been some of those incidents, but for the most part, we've been able to just share our concerns more through the director of nursing.
And have you made any recommendations to the director of nursing about changes that you have seen that you thought might be advisable to be made?
Madam Chair, I believe that the feedback that we've been giving in this informal way has been more to, we do speak to units that we see where things seem to be working very well, where there's good communication, where we've observed an RN supervising cares being given by someone else. And so we've passed that along, that we've seen some good cares on particular units. Our correction orders that we've issued have suggested in writing ways that they might address some of those concerns. And so I think most of the feedback we've given along those lines has just reinforced that we've observed that there's a need for a system or something like that.
And Ms. Miner, the corrections orders that you've either issued most recently or in January, were they primarily in certain units as opposed to other units at the home?
Madam Chair, I believe that there were a variety of units that were cited for the different types of correction orders. The falls were happening primarily in one unit, but not solely in that unit. So, again, I think it speaks to a need for a system approach to it, but in some cases they could look to some of their own units to find successful approaches that could then be used in other units.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Miner, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cox indicated in response to Senator Sharon's question that they felt that the number one thing that needed to be addressed was training. And I'm wondering if that has been your observation.
Madam Chair and Senator, recognizing that responsibility for deciding what goes first is with the board and not with us, I can just share with you that our staff, as we debrief on a daily basis, we have agreed that there's a need for more training. As has been suggested here, it's certainly not about the competence. It is about understanding the internal policies and how those are to be carried out, and a communication issue.
Are there other questions? Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, Ms. Miner, how receptive has the director of nurses been to the suggestions you've been making, and have you seen them being implemented as you've been making the suggestions?
Madam Chair and Senator, the director of nursing has been very receptive to that. And in fact, I heard from staff this morning that one of the issues that they brought to her yesterday, when they checked today, it had already been addressed. So we've been feeling that she's been very open to it. And frankly, we've been treated very well. I mean, staff and residents are all saying that they're really glad that we're there. So I think that there's been no tension that we're aware of, no resistance. In fact, people are very open and accepting of whatever observations mm-hmm. we can share or suggestions we've made.
Other questions? Thank you very much then, Ms. Miner.
You're welcome.
Joan Wilshire?
Morning, Madam Chair and Senate members. My name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability, which is an advisory state agency to the governor, legislature, state agencies, and the public regarding disability issues. However, I am also the niece of one of the people who died at the VA home in January, whose medical care is now being investigated by the Minnesota Department of Health in regard to the allegations of neglect. Right now, I'd like to just share with you, I want to put a face with the person who I'm talking about so you can see the family. And yes, we do all look alike. On January 4th, my uncle died at the Minneapolis VA home. This was after living there for 2 years. My cousins informed the family that he had passed away in his sleep peacefully. His family was grateful that he did not suffer. 1 month later, the family was informed of the investigation by the Minnesota Department of Health. They were shocked to learn about the investigation. After reading the investigative report from the Health Department, I want to now outline to you some key issues that you need to be brought to your attention. He had been experiencing hypoglycemia as a result of his diabetes prior to his death. However, that night when he died, several health care protocols were not performed that should have been. One, the nurses did not check the protocol for hypoglycemia. These actions might have actually saved his life had they actually done this. Two, it states in his chart that the doctor was to be notified immediately upon if his blood sugar level changed. This was not done. Neither an RN was called nor the physician to inform them of this change in my uncle's health that evening. Nor had this been done days prior to this when his blood sugar level was elevated and lowering as well. Three, at the shift changes, the staff did not discuss his hypoglycemia that was occurring that evening. Why would the nurses have not discussed this for consistency's sake as well as just for the well-being of a patient in the VA home? Four, currently there are no means at bedside to identify whether a resident is full code. Why not? Shouldn't patients that are DNR, do not resuscitate, have an indication of that status on their charts? My uncle did not have a DNR on his chart as he was listed as full code per his advanced directives. The residence, number five, the resident's medical record is located in a considerable distance from the patient's room. This is another question that should be asked. Why? Perhaps the medical records need to be located in closer proximity to the patient so the medical staff can look at the chart to determine what treatment is needed and required. Had they actually read his chart, they would have been familiar with the fact that he was not a DNR but full code. And six, nothing here this morning has been said about the dishonesty and lack of disclosure of the circumstances of my uncle's death. Question here is, why was the VA home dishonest in telling the family the truth about his death? When the medical staff finally realized that my uncle's blood sugar that night of January 4th was not responding, they actually tried to have him drink an oral substance that would increase his blood sugar level. At that point, he was already in a comatose state and could have choked on this liquid substance. Then, according to the investigative report, he started to sweat, he slumped over, and stopped breathing. They did not perform CPR, nor did they call 911. As I said, they did not perform CPR, nor did they call 911, despite the fact he had listed on his chart full code, not a DNR. As a person with a disability, one of the most feared issues we live with is that the medical professionals will not follow the healthcare directives that we have written for ourselves. Currently, the healthcare system is urging all people with and without disabilities to write their healthcare directives, so you as an individual will have your wishes known on how you want to be treated in the end-of-life situations. What good is this healthcare directive if no professional, medical professional, are going to be able to abide by it? We applaud the governor for taking prompt action and the Minnesota Department of Health for fining the VA home on these issues. I urge the legislature to take the same prompt action. Recommendations we would suggest are, one, more oversight of how all health care is being delivered at the VA home. Two, accountability needs to be included in the oversight. This case needs to be reviewed by the Board of Nursing for review of the individual nurses involved in the investigation. At least five nurses failed to monitor my uncle's worsening condition that evening. When the investigators asked the nursing staff to respond to their investigation, none of them responded. Three, more RNs need to be hired because it is obvious that the current mix of medical staff is not capable of handling monitoring of simple blood sugar levels appropriately. And four, better training of staff on issues regarding diabetes and knowledge of protocols for full code and DNR issues. And five, mandate honest and honest disclosure of individuals' deaths in the actual nursing home to the families. And finally, my cousin's only agenda here today is to change the healthcare system so that this cannot happen to another veteran, or for that matter, anyone who can be victimized by the medical system. My cousins told me their dad loved it there at the VA home. Maybe not the food so much, but he played cards there with his friends, and he really enjoyed life, and he was thriving there these last 2 years. Our veterans should be treated with respect and dignity. After all, he was a veteran, he was a father, he was a husband, he was a friend, and he was my uncle. He deserved better. That's all I have. I don't know if you have any comments or questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wilshire. We're very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
And I think it's appropriate to note that it is not the only time this has happened, and it is not acceptable. You know, probably 10 years ago now, I had a woman in Minneapolis whose husband died at the Minneapolis Veterans Home because he was knocked over by another resident, and that resident and the resident underneath him could not get up. And this happened at 8 o'clock in the morning, and these gentlemen laid on the floor for over 45 minutes, and they were finally discovered by a janitor. And the gentleman who died died because of the compression on his chest. He also was never taken to the hospital. So we take this very seriously, and we do believe that these are systemic issues that need to be addressed in a systemic fashion. Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Todd Dobish.
Madam Chairman and Senators, I come here to represent the residents. I come here because I'm a demographic example of the people you're representing. I'm not because I'm a veteran, but because I'm a veteran in need of your services, and deserving the health and dignity and respect of my care team and my health providers. I would like to give you a roads traveled. Before I do that, I would like to say that I'm deeply shocked and abhorred to hear of the circumstances of Bob Wicken's dismissal. I remember dearly when on February 27th when things were going awry, that he went to each unit to reassure the nurses of what was happening, and to abode their concerns. And he's a humanitarian and a fellow veteran, and he deserved better. In fact, if he ever gets a chance again, he deserves better. I'm schizophrenic. I'm a paranoid schizophrenic, and I'm diabetic. I've known about my diabetes for 2 years now. I've had hints of my schizophrenia since my childhood. I don't apologize for it. I don't apologize for it, and I don't expect pity for it. It's something that serves me and comforts me at times, and it's something that gives me great anxiety. So when I speak about it, certain issues today, understand that and take that into consideration. The way I came into being at the Minnesota Veterans Home was after a parachute mishap in the Army Airborne. I was released from service to the awaiting arms of the Veterans Administration in Milwaukee, where I received 10% disability rating for my lungs and bronchitis, and 10% for my knee, which was endemic of my parachute accident. I call it my 13 and a half jump. And I was given vocational training at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay and the University of Wisconsin Center Fox Valley. There was foreshadowing of my illness in the service of my schizophrenia in the service, and there was as I progressed through the institution, the UWGB, and the educational institutions and different jobs, it became clear to me that I couldn't function in the Army. I was a danger to myself and others. In the education, I got 27 credits, but bargain basement grades. I enjoyed myself. I enjoyed being with people that were learning, and I don't apologize for it. One day, due to an episode, I packed my car, which didn't have any heat, and which I had just fixed the radiator on, and proceeded at 90 miles an hour to the Minnesota Veterans, to the Minnesota Minneapolis VA, where my brother and sister were going to school, and my 13 cousins and uncle and aunt, Jim and Carol Dobish, were living, to receive better medical care because of reports I had heard from other veterans in your system, because I had a delusion that I had spoken to somebody at the VA Minneapolis Veterans Home in Building 4. So I traveled most of that night I traveled most of that night to and lost my way, and finally came up the river, followed the river to 94, where I was greeted by my brother, and dropped on the doorstep of the VA medical center the next day. Within hours, I was brought to Heilman House, given a warm meal, and a comfortable bed to sleep in, and my in processing into the Minnesota Veterans Home began. Throughout the years, I've served the Veterans Home, and the Veterans Home has served me. From 89 to 92, when I first got there, I was on the Resident Rules Committee, which was a organization of the last wave of World War I veterans, World War II veterans, and one or two Vietnam veterans and myself. We accomplished miracles there. We had line item veto of the 90-50 rules, which, you, as you all know, govern the Minnesota Veterans Home. And if you look at the ink that those rules are made of, there's a little bit of my blood in those rules. I'm very proud of them, and I'm also a little concerned about how they've been misinterpreted throughout the years, and that after that process we seem to lose our representation through the eyes of the Minnesota Veterans Board, Home Board, and the Minnesota Veterans Home. I believe that With the onset of the long-term care commission, that there should be a position on that committee, as there should be a position at the Minnesota Veterans Home Board for a resident to fill, and I volunteer for that position. I believe that demographics is on my side, because we're 95% of the cause of the problems you're seeing today, and we should be 95% of the solution.
Mr. Dobish, could you just tell us how you feel about the actual care that's being provided at the Minneapolis home, let's just say in the last 6 months?
In the last 6 months, I need to travel a road to show you the disparity and the promise of the Minnesota Veterans Home, Madam Chairman.
Well, we do have limited time, and we are trying to focus this hearing on the care that's being given at the home. So if you have some comments about that, I think that would be what would be beneficial today.
Okay. As of, well, I... I would have to go back to 12 months if the chairman.
That's fine.
12 months ago on March 13th, I was given a written message that my furniture, that I had too much furniture in my room, and that it had to be removed. It took me 15 years to get a single room at the Minnesota Veterans Home, and it's very spacious, and the reason given was that the fire marshal had said there was it had blocked my entering and exiting the um, the my room, which it didn't. My room is, the perimeter of my room is, was surrounded with furniture. And my furniture was removed from my room and my contents dumped, unceremoniously dumped in the middle of my room. And where I, and the furniture that I that was misplaced was later, I later discovered it in the dentist's office that they had just recently reopened. The reason for that is that the the current monies that the veterans are receiving and setting are they're supposed to be setting aside money for for furnishings to be replaced and renewed, and they're not doing that. And I think the dentist's office didn't deserve my furniture.
You're right, Mr. Dobish. If your furniture needed to be removed from your room, you should have been able to have your family take it or, you know, dispose of it in a way that was, agreeable to you.
It was the Veterans Home's furniture.
Oh, it was the Veterans Home's furniture. It wasn't your furniture?
No.
So then they were just redeploying that furniture as they felt there was a need for it?
Yes.
Mr. Dobish, do you feel that you're receiving appropriate care for your mental health?
Yes, I do. I'm currently being seen by a physician at the VA Medical Center, Dr. Dean.
And the follow-up care that you receive at the home for your mental health, is you feel that's appropriate?
I'm not receiving any follow-up care for my mental health at the home right at this time.
So do you receive any services beside the services that you receive when you see your psychiatrist?
I receive a hot meal and I receive the guidance of my of a part-time social worker.
And do you feel the services you receive from the social worker at the home are appropriate?
I feel the social worker that I see at the VA medical or at the veterans home works two other jobs to support her mother, and herself. Just like the HST, one of the HSTs at the home who works as a waitress and is studying real estate on the side to move out of her father-in-law's house with her three children.
How many hours a day, or I mean, I guess we should say, how many hours a week do you visit with the social worker at the home?
About 2 to 3.
2 to 3 hours a week?
Yeah.
And do you feel that your diabetes is being monitored properly? How often do they check your blood levels?
My diabetes is being controlled by medicine.
And how often do they check to see if you need to have your medicines reevaluated?
They check every 3 to 6 months.
And do you feel that's frequent enough?
At first I was a little apprehensive, but I see that with the other veterans who are diabetics and stuff like that, we rely on each other to educate ourselves on our diabetes.
And well, that is also important, but do you I feel that 3 to 6 months is making sure that your diabetes is under control.
Yes, I do.
Other questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Dobish, for coming in and for your testimony today.
Yes.
It's very important for us to hear from the people living there. And I congratulate you on the presidency of the Residents Council. I'm glad to see
that. I should point out that I was past president of the Resident Council for 3 years from 1986 to 1996 to 1999. In 99, when I returned, the Resident Council as we knew it was changed, and the delegates were not selected any longer from each floor, and there was no president.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dobish, I just want to let you know that one of the bills that I put in after we started learning about some of the difficulties at the Minneapolis Veterans Home was to include a resident on the Minneapolis Veterans Home board, as well as a direct care staff, to include those as board positions. So I think it's very important to hear from the residents and hear from direct care staff as board members discuss the big issues and try to choose the best direction for the system. So just want to let you know that there are some of those things in the works.
Yes. I would also like to point out that my incident with the furniture was not under the new administration. It was in past administrations. And that the care and conscientious, I believe that the current administration is proactive, and that I'd like to point out that the current head administrator at the Minnesota Veterans Home is also an RN, and is a Eden alternative trainer who has traveled to other countries to remedy healthcare issues in other nursing homes.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Dobish, and we wish you the best in the future. And maybe your dream will come true and you'll end up being a board member of the Veterans Homes Board.
Okay.
Thank you. Pat Ritchie.
Hello, Madam Chair. Good morning. And the committee. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Fred? Okay. My name is Pat Ritchie, and I have worked at the Minnesota Veterans Home for 18 plus years. My father was a resident of the home, and my husband is a veteran, and I am very well aware of veterans' issues. The current position that I hold is the resident benefit coordinator, and I really enjoy working with the residents. I'm also the chief steward for AFSCME Local 744. I have two of my union members here with me. They are also in the local leadership. Our union is made up of 350 workers at the home, to include LPNs, human service technicians, who provide direct care to our residents. We also represent housekeeping, food service, office support staff, and various trades at the facility. we need to know that AFSCME members want and need to be a part of the solution in improving care at the Veterans Home. We're the frontline workers who face the challenges and understand the solutions. We see three glaring problems in providing quality care. Number one, too few staff with unmanageable workloads and back-to-back mandations. Number two, we have a high turnover rate. Right now, according to the council data, our turnover rate is 32% annually. And number three is the revolving door of top managers with constantly changing procedures and the communication to the line staff of these new procedures. To address all previous health department citations, AFSCME has offered numerous solutions. Unfortunately, the Veterans Home Board and administration have failed to act on these and other suggestions. Number one, include union workers in addressing citations. Number two, allow time during shift change so direct care workers can share resident information. Number three, hold monthly unit meetings to address the health needs of individual residents. Number four, hire an instructor to help staff who speak English as a second language understand their training and responsibilities. Number four, create a diversity committee supported by AFSCME staff. And number five, participate in a Healthy Workplaces initiative to improve morale. AFSCME teamed up with Health Partners to make Regents Hospital a much healthier workplace where people resolve conflict and treat each other with respect. In summation, administrators must make us a part of the solution. I implore you to do three things to improve care for our veterans. Number one, make someone accountable for improving the care. We need strong leaders who will empower the staff with the tools to help them succeed, and you will see positive results in the care given to our residents. Bring back good managers with proven work histories at the home who have been driven out by previous administration. And I would also like to make note that 5 years ago, we had very few citations at the home. And I think as of this date, we maybe have two people left on that original management team that ran the home. And they have been driven out by poor administration. Secondly, stop studying the problem and start investing in adequate staff. Reports sit on shelf collecting dust and nothing changes. You'd see marked improvements today if the money wasted on ignored studies had been invested in adequate staffing. And I am referring to the Wilder study, Health Dimensions. Any nursing home administrator will tell you that mistakes can be avoided if workers have enough time to do their job. In other words, fiscal responsibility. Thirdly, make AFSCME the membership part of the solution. Let all of us who have been dedicated, who have worked diligently with our residents, take back ownership of our facility. Bring back some of our best employees and managers who should never have been driven away, and let us get back to work. Any questions?
Ms. Ritchie, the board, some of the board members are here today, and you heard them tell us that they are going to be working with the line staff to make improvements, and so we will be holding them accountable for that. Secondly, I'd just like to say that we did appropriate $4 million. Most of that money was to go to the Minneapolis Veterans Home for increasing their staffing. The board had, after many concerns about staffing at the Minneapolis Home, taken their reserves and had used them to increase staffing, and the $4 million was needed then to continue that level of staffing. We have also looked at the per diems, the daily per diems at the Minneapolis Home, both for the skilled care and the domiciliary care, and compared it to the other veterans' homes that are funded in Minnesota, and we find the per diems to be very comparable. So it's hard to imagine then that the staffing isn't also comparable.
If I may speak.
Yes.
I have two HSTs sitting here with me that work on a unit, and I believe they will both concur with me that there is not an adequate enough staff for the hands-on care. I know for a fact that many HSTs have to sit and figure out what piece of the care plan to let go in order to make it through to the end of their day, be it shaving, be it range of motion. Anytime you two want to say something, go ahead. But we really, I believe there's an average of five HSTs during the day, Sean?
In 17, that is correct. That is not an adequate number of aides to do the job. When you talk about falls, I mean, they talked about equipment, floor mats, alarms, and different. But all those things, what you really need is you need the adequate staff to take these people to the bathroom. They need activities. Sometimes on the weekends, they don't have activities, so they're just left to sit, okay? They say things have been fixed. Well, that's not entirely true. I had a report last Saturday that on the 11 to 7 shift, in two of the units worked with one HST, and that's a 50-bed unit. Even with the health department camping out there, I mean, that's something that's totally unacceptable.
Well, is it possible that the staffing levels are, because they're staffing equally across the system, that there might be more acuity in some units and a need for greater staff in some units?
Yes, Madam Chairman, that is a correct observation. Yes, some of the units are heavier than other units, but they have made an arbitrary decision just to go with five everywhere. So yeah, that is a good observation.
Okay, well, we did raise that issue with them when they were here today, and we will be expecting accountability on that issue.
And I have one more thing that I would like to say, and that is that earlier I heard it said that we need to improve on our electronics. And all I have to say to you folks is electronics cannot turn a resident. Electronics cannot feed a resident. And electronics cannot toilet our residents. So please help us.
Ms. Ritchie, I certainly agree with you, but electronics could let the unit at the home that schedules a staff understand better when the acuity levels are changing and therefore the staffing levels need to be adjusted.
Okay.
Are there any questions? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Ritchie, would you agree with the earlier witness we heard that said that the orders for a patient, the charts are located too far away, and that becomes difficult for people to see what a patient actually needs?
Yes.
The charts are kept at a central location up at the nurse's station.
Senator Chairman, there are other places. I mean, that kind of information should be located on the medical, the medication record also. You know, I mean, it's something that should be quickly accessible. I mean, and...
Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
Could you describe to me how you change your shifts, how information is communicated about the condition of each of the patients that you're assigned to and the needs during the next eight-hour shift?
I can speak on the unit that I'm on, 3 North. Currently, we do not receive a report. The aides do not receive a report. Usually what I do, because I've been there for 25 years and I know better, is I'll look at the 24-hour report sheet. Sam, you want to say something?
What you say is true.
How do you receive reports, Sam?
Well, usually I receive report. Like if I'm leaving my shift, I look for the next person who come into my group. If John come to take over, I get John, you know, walking around and telling what happened during my shift.
But there is no systematic way for that to happen.
He has to go into meeting the nurse's office and give report. But then everything just went, you know, everything just disappeared. I don't know. You know, but it should be from shift to shift report. If John comes out to take over from Paul, get report to John. That's exactly what happened during the 8 hours. He'll take it from there to the next shift.
Madam Chairwoman, the nurses, to be fair, the nurses actually do have they tape report. So when the new nurses come on, they listen to the tape, or sometimes they give a live report of what went on with their patients during the shift. However, that the aides are not receiving a report, at least on my unit.
Okay.
Other units may do that. But.
Other questions? Well, we really want to thank you for the job you're doing. We don't want you to get discouraged. You're taking care of some very important people at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, and we hope to see things improve there, and we hope to keep hearing from people as to ideas and suggestions they have for making those improvements. And your suggestions today have been duly noted, and we will be following up with the board the next time they come back to talk with us in terms of how they're progressing.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Members, I'd like to thank you for staying the extra time it took us today. I really appreciate that. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.